I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show. I am Dr. Carl O'Helvey, your host. My first guest tonight is Dr. Jacob Teitelbaum, a board-certified internist and medical director of a national chain of fibromyalgia and fatigue centers, www.fibroandfatigue.com. Having suffered with and overcome these illnesses in 1975, he spent the next 30 years creating, researching, and teaching about effective therapies for fatigue and pain. He is the senior author of the landmark studies, Effective Treatment of Chronic Fatigue Syndrome and Fibromyalgia, a Placebo-Controlled Study, and of Effective Treatment of Chronic Fatigue Syndrome and Fibromyalgia with D-Ribose. Dr. Teitelbaum lectures internationally and is the author of the best-selling book, From Fatigue to Fantastic. He is also the author of Three Steps to Happiness, Healing Through Joy, and the recently released Pain-Free 1-2-3, a proven program to get you pain-free by McGraw-Hill Publishers in 2006. As a patient advocate, Dr. Teitelbaum has a policy of not taking money from any pharmaceutical or natural products company, and 100% of the royalties from his products go to charity. His website is www.vitality101.com. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, Jacob, and I look forward to hearing more about treating arthritis naturally. Now first, how many Americans die unnecessarily each year from arthritis medications?
Well, Carl, the current research suggests, and this is considered very conservative, that there are 16,500 deaths a year in the United States from arthritis medications just from the bleeding ulcers. And that's from the medication being taken as directed. It's not kind of overdose. It's not kind of people who take it for stuff besides arthritis. So this is a major cause of death. 16,500 Americans, and I'm going to say not just that they die, but that they die unnecessarily.
I was going to ask you if this was all because of the chemicals or if it was air, but you've already answered the question. Now, a lot of people take the glucosamine and chondroitin, but didn't the NIH study show that these were ineffective for treating arthritis?
Well, actually not quite. What the NIH study showed were that these natural supplements were more effective than Celebrex. But what the study showed is that when the NIH hires pretty much exclusively people on the drug company payroll to design and run a study comparing that drug company's medication against a natural product, that the truth and what actually is happening is absolutely irrelevant. Because, again, what the data showed was that the natural remedy was more effective. What the conclusion of the study was, oh, no, use the medication instead. The misimpression given to the media was that it was ineffective. Out of the thousands of data points, they picked one that they contorted within an inch of its life to give an implication of it being ineffective. But, again, if you look at the study, every single one of the study authors, except for one who is somewhere down the list and had a lesser role, was on the payroll of the drug companies making the pain medications that would lose money if they showed the truth, which is that these natural remedies are very effective.
Well, do you think we'll ever get beyond these powerful drug companies that tend to have the money, that back the research, that gets the approval from the FDA, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and the others do not have the backing, do not have the money, and consequently do not get the backing, and consequently the public do not hear about them?
Well, what will need to happen is healthcare reform moves forward. If we're going to be serious about giving people choices and any option besides really toxic and expensive medications that bankrupt the system, and I'm not against medications. Some of them are very good and very helpful. It's just that in the scheme of things, what determines if a medication is used is not the science, nor its effectiveness, and certainly not its safety. What determines whether medication is used is how profitable it can be, and
right.
that's dangerous. So what's required is that natural remedies be taken out of the jurisdiction of the FDA
mm-hmm.
and put under another regulatory agency made up of experts in the field, preferably who are not on the payroll of either the natural product companies or the drug companies, but who are experts in the field. Until that happens, what we have is this walking disaster that we call our healthcare system, but it's not going to be walking very long. It is going bankrupt, and we will either change things ahead of time or we'll wait for the system to collapse and we have no choice.
Good. I hope that comes about.
It will, one way or the other.
Right. Right. How do you treat, then, arthritis naturally?
Well, I like to use a four-step program, Carl. It's very effective.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, you want to go ahead and repair the joints. And that means feeding them what they need. This would include the glucosamine, 750 milligrams twice a day.
Mm-hmm.
You want to use the glucosamine sulfate. Chondroitin, I'll use sometimes. I may save it more for worse cases and more difficult cases, just because it's a bit more pricey.
Mm-hmm.
But I will use MSM, that's methyl sulfonyl methane,
mm-hmm.
in any health food store, 2 to 3 grams a day. Again, if people want to throw it in for the 6 weeks, the dose for the chondroitin will be 400 milligrams 3 times a day. But beyond that, there's many other nutrients, from A to zinc, and vitamin D, a host of other things that are critical for healing in the body. And I recommend a good vitamin powder. My favorite is called the Energy Revitalization System by
mm-hmm.
Enzymatic Therapy. One drink replaces over 35 tablets of supplements. Gives really overall nutritional support. It's good, I think, for everybody for who wants overall support. Again, most health food stores, vitality101.com, you can find it. And that would be step one, would be repair.
Mm-hmm.
Step two would be to turn off the inflammation. You'll find that the body sometimes is in a pro-inflammatory mode, others it's in a low-key for inflammation. And a nice simple gauge to see where your body is when you get a paper cut, you'll notice sometimes it gets all red and inflamed, and other times it goes away literally in seconds, you don't even notice it. That's one simple indicator of where your inflammation system happens to be set at that time.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of using Motrin family medications and NSAIDs, basically that whole family, which is marauded, are very dangerous, and also the Celebrex medications, which are quite toxic as well, the natural anti-inflammatories like willow bark and
mm-hmm.
boswellia have been shown to be more effective. Motrin, for example, was only half as effective as willow bark. The willow bark was twice as effective, looking at chronic back pain as an example. Boswellia decreased arthritis pain 90%. 90%, amazing, in 8 weeks. So my favorite is a mix of willow bark, boswellia,
mm-hmm.
and cherry.
Mm-hmm.
Again, people can find out in a product called N-Pain or another one called the Pain Formula, available in most health food stores and also at vitality101.com. I will note, by the way, Carl, I take no money from pharmaceutical companies or natural product companies.
Mm-hmm.
And even products I've developed, 100% of the royalties go to charity. So you're going to find I'm
right.
very picky and
right.
passionate about thumbs up and thumbs down about things. But that allows me to do it without blushing too much. So the N-Pain combination, basically willow bark, boswellia, cherry. Other good anti-inflammatories would include ginger and curcumin or turmeric. So if you have a hankering for Indian food, you know, make yourself some curries, put the turmeric in. But you have to add black pepper because that has piperine, because otherwise the turmeric or curcumin is poorly absorbed into
mm-hmm.
your body.
Mm-hmm.
So make yourself a nice Indian food, pepper it up. And also ginger. I'll just use slices of ginger, dry them and make a ginger tea. But the simplest thing, I think, is just to use something like an N-Pain mix, but the one by Enzymatic Therapy. 2 tablets 3 times a day. Give it 6 weeks because the effect continues to build over time. And at that point, most people find they can stop their medications and still be pain-free. You can take these with any of the pain medications. And then the third step is to restore function, walking, stretching, heat. And the fourth one for difficult cases that persist will be to use a special acupressure technique called NAET to eliminate food allergies. And also for rheumatoid arthritis, I will go ahead and give antibiotics and fish oil.
Mm-hmm. Now, some people talk about detoxing. Is that effective at all with arthritis?
Well, detoxing tends to be effective overall for a lot of pains and a lot of issues. what I find is when I give people proper nutritional support and mm-hmm. I clear out their bowel infections
mm-hmm.
and get them off the sugar,
mm-hmm.
which is really the main issue, their body will detox on their own.
Mm-hmm.
An important point is that many people who think they have arthritis don't.
Mm-hmm.
Even if the x-rays show arthritis, that's not the source of their pain.
Oh, it is.
For many people, it's the muscle aches. The muscles that attach around the joints are getting achy.
Mm-hmm.
And when you look at muscle pain, the heat that we talked about is helpful. The things we talked about with the vitamin powder and the end pain will help muscle pain.
Mm-hmm.
But the keys for muscle pain will be, especially if you feel achy in general, will be getting what I call shine.
Mm-hmm.
Get your sleep. H should be hormonal support for people. Thyroid, treating low thyroid despite normal tests, very important. Low adrenal, even low estrogen or testosterone. Treating underlying infections, which are a major cause of toxicity. I mean, certainly the 80,000 chemicals in the environment
right.
and the garbage we put, what that you call the American diet, major issues as well. But there's these other aspects as well, that the bowel infections are what's driving a lot of the toxicity.
Mm-hmm.
So you want to clear those up. Nutritional support and exercise will be a very good way to detox. The good sauna, I like the far infrared, mm-hmm. like high-tech health.
Mm-hmm.
will do very good things for detox. So you'll find there's many ways that you can help the body to take a load off, and you can take any of a number of loads off, and that will leave the body strong enough to get itself feeling better.
Mm-hmm.
Detox, mm-hmm. certainly an important potential way to go after things.
Mm-hmm. Now, do you find that the anti-inflammatory diet tends to turn the body more alkaline?
Well, it may make the body more alkaline. I find that the whole question of acid base,
mm-hmm.
I think it's one that's very significant,
mm-hmm.
but we don't have a really good way of telling. I mean, maybe the best way we have of telling is checking morning urine or saliva.
Mm-hmm.
But I found there's the book that was very well written and all the rest. They talked about using this machine to check the blood levels and the rest. And
mm-hmm.
I was very impressed about 20 years ago when I went out, got the machine, and found that the result from the machine was almost totally dependent on how many seconds it took to get the blood from the patient to the machine, and they hadn't even mentioned that at all. You'll find that a lot of these things sound very good, but when you actually look at them and play with them, we don't know enough yet to really do it as well as we should. Certainly, if you have a high vegetable diet, you know, and high fish oils and things, you have things, you know, move away from the grain-fed meats, you're going to move more to an alkaline.
Mm-hmm.
But I think it's more complex than we really know yet in natural medicine.
And is there research going on in that area?
I don't think there's much, sadly, because the medical perspective on it is that your pH is set at 7.4 period by your breathing no matter what, and that the buffering systems take care. And most from a medical worldview,
mm-hmm.
they don't really look at, well, what happens if your metabolism has to shift to maintain that balance.
Yeah.
So, sadly, I have not seen
mm-hmm.
a lot of good research going on in the area because it's just not part of the medical system's view of reality, which is too bad, you know.
Now, Jacob, is there anything else you'd like to say about arthritis before we talk about your books?
Just that if you have arthritis all over, if you ache all over, and you have trouble sleeping as well with fatigue, you probably don't have arthritis. You probably have fibromyalgia, which,
mm-hmm.
again, it's the pains are sometimes around the joints, and people get confused, and the
mm-hmm.
doctors will miss it. That's very treatable with what you call the SHINE protocol. But know that, again, these natural remedies are very, very powerfully effective. I've treated over 3,000 people with chronic pain, and I can count on my fingers, with a couple of fingers left over, how many we've not been able to get good pain relief and adequate pain relief for. So that your doctor doesn't know how to get you well doesn't
mm-hmm.
mean that there's no treatment
mm-hmm.
That's effective. It just means that they don't know
mm-hmm.
and find somebody who does.
Now, you've had a long experience with fibromyalgia. Can you talk just briefly about that, even though we're focusing on arthritis? I think it's an interesting subject that many people probably do not know about.
It's an important area. I came down with chronic fatigue syndrome and fibromyalgia after a nasty viral infection in 1975 when I was in medical school. And it knocked me out of med school. And I was paying my own way, so no scholarship, no work study, no loan. I was homeless. I was sleeping in parks.
Mm-hmm.
And I learned how to get that, how to effectively treat the disease when I was homeless sleeping in parks from people that I met, naturopaths, herbal medicine healers, energy workers. It was amazing what God brings by when you're just open to it.
Right, right.
And the medical school professors, clueless. So whether you call it the universe or whatever it is,
mm-hmm.
I had this line of people coming in teaching me what I needed to know, and I learned how to get well. Since then, we've treated thousands of people with fibromyalgia. The Fibromyalgia and Fatigue Centers have treated tens of thousands. And our research that's published shows a 91% improvement rate by treating with the SHINE protocol, as you mentioned.
Oh.
And an easy thing, if people are exhausted, can't sleep, and have widespread pain, they have fibromyalgia.
Mm-hmm.
If they go to the website vitality101.com, and there's a free symptom analysis program. Actually, I'm the one in the United States who owns the patent on a computerized physician.
Mm-hmm.
It's what I needed to make effective treatments available for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
That program is available for free. People can fill out the symptom analysis. It'll be questionnaires. If they have the lab tests, it'll ask for the pertinent lab test. It'll analyze it all, tell you what's causing your fibromyalgia, and tailor a treatment protocol to your case to tell you how to make it go away.
Mm-hmm. Great. Now, Jacob, would you tell us about your books and also how the listeners can locate these?
The website vitality101.com gives a lot of useful information. You'll see health conditions from A to Z. It will have my book, From Fatigued to Fantastic, which is more for chronic fatigue or fibromyalgia. And it'll also have the book Pain-Free 1-2-3, which will go through each of the more common kinds of pain, arthritis, nerve pain, back pain, headaches, muscle pain, and on, and tell you exactly how to make that pain go away and how to use the best of natural and prescription therapies, focusing on natural because those work better and are safer for each kind of pain. Frankly, a lot of this information is also on the website
mm-hmm.
under Health Topics from A to Z. My publisher doesn't want me to say that, but it's there for free as well.
Oh. Well, I appreciate this very much, Jacob. It's been very interesting, and I know the listeners will learn a lot from this.
Carl, I thank you, too. And if I could mention one other thing, for those
uh-huh.
of you out there who have an iPhone
mm-hmm.
or an iTouch, there's a free iPhone application called Natural Cures.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually the sixth top application in the free health and fitness category, but Natural Cures. And it will tell you topics, A to Z, the stuff we talked about today on arthritis, for example, all in there, just kind of summarized and tell people exactly how to get their life back.
Great. Thank you, Jacob.
Thank you, Carl.
My second guest is Dr. David Russell, who holds a doctorate in naturopathic medicine and is completing another doctorate of divinity, and is the founder and director of the nonprofit organization Caritas Traditionalis, an international project whose goal is to create a self-sustaining medical presence in economically depressed communities. He also maintains consultation on integrated health in Tucson, Arizona, and Denmark. For the past 30 years, he has taught classical medical disciplines in Europe, Nepal, and the United States, as well as diagnostic and homeopathics in naturopathic schools in Denmark and Norway. In addition to his doctoral degree, his education includes studying and practicing with classical masters in Europe, Nepal, and the Middle East. He holds certification in reflexology, homeopathy, acupuncture, biochemistry, iridology, and kinetherapy. He is also qualified in Chinese, Tibetan, Ayurvedic, and Islamic medicine. He lived in Denmark from 1969 to 1991 and has worked in the health field since 1974. During that time, he became a founding member of the Danish Society for Integrated Medicine and was instrumental in the establishment of three major clinics for integrated medicine in Denmark. He is also a medical consultant for a Danish clinic for drug and alcohol abuse. David is the author of Healthy Solutions, a guide to simple healing and healthy wisdom, for which he received the Arizona Book Award for Best Health, Nutrition, Wellness Book. He lectures widely and has been featured at events and conferences, including the International Organization of Probiotic Medicine, Institute of Noetic Sciences, American Academy of Biological Dentistry, Cancer Control Society, Jungian Society, and the University of Arizona. I welcome you to the Holistic Health Show, David, and I look forward to hearing how you work with arthritis patients.
Well, thank you, Carl, and I'm very pleased to be with you and with your listeners today. Well, Elsa, when you're asking about this aspect of arthritis, I'm trained mostly, one might say, as a classical doctor. Classical medical sciences are, for example, the Chinese and the Ayurvedic, Tibetan, Islamic, and some of the European forms like the European homeopathy and European naturopathy, which is a little different than those forms, the same forms used in the United States. And we have a little different way of understanding and responding to to conditions like arthritis.
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you mean by classical medicine?
Well, classical medicine is a term we use to denote what we call the classical medical sciences. Actually, in the world today, there are basically three different types of medicine being practiced in the economically privileged countries, one might say. Also, you have regular allopathic medicine or conventional medicine, what we know as regular doctors and nurses, MDs, things like that, and trained in that field, Western medicine. Then you have what you call alternative medicine. An example of that would be naturopathy here in the United States, American naturopaths and therapists working in those areas. And those basically are people who are trained in allopathic medicine, basically, in the same philosophy as allopathic or Western medicine, but they are doing the treatments in an alternative way.
Mm-hmm.
For example, if a person had bacterial infection like bronchitis or something, the doctors would have a tendency to give an antibiotic, whereas a naturopath would have a tendency to give some form of herb or other antibiotic natural substance. The idea, the philosophy would be basically the same, and that would be to neutralize or kill the microbe that was considered to be responsible for the disease. So they go quite hand in hand, much of the alternative medicine in the United States and the allopathic medicine. Now, you have another field which we call classical medicine. Now, these are the medical sciences that developed in the classical cultures like China or Ayurveda in India or Tibet or the Islamic countries, the Greek-influenced countries. These sciences have been developing in these cultures for a couple of millennia, actually, and they are very sophisticated medical sciences, but we might say that they are considerably more holistic in one sense, to use a more modern term for them. They take into consideration many more factors having to do with health and disease than the allopathic or Western medicine does. And of course, they have a different way of evaluating and a different way of treating what we call disease. So there's those three fields that are open today.
Mm-hmm. And what is the advantage to have such a diverse background, such as you have when working with individuals that have chronic conditions like arthritis or cancer?
Well, I think that the advantage, I never thought of it that way when I started out many years ago in my training. It seems like I have a natural curiosity to want to understand things. And what happens there is that when you're studying any particular form of medicine, medical science, be it allopathic or Chinese or Ayurvedic, whatever, these all arise, all of these medical sciences, in fact, all forms of science, no matter where they come from, basically are based on a philosophy. Their foundation is a sense of cultural philosophy, how this culture perceives the reality and perceives the universe and perceives the way that things occur. occur in life. And out of that arise these sciences as well as medical sciences. So every culture with its medical science and therefore its philosophy has tremendous insights into the way that life and nature function. And yet, at the same time, there's a limitation there because no particular culture and therefore science can ever cover all of the contingencies of the nature of reality. So what happens is that, for example, the Chinese culture and its way of understanding health and disease is considerably different in, to a certain extent, than the Ayurvedic or the Tibetan or the Islamic or the European homeopath would do. And each one has its limitations and its strengths.
Mm-hmm.
So as a therapist, as a doctor, when we're dealing with a patient, there's a lot of responsibility for doing your best to serve this person, this patient, this client, is to really be able to do something for them, to really be able to do your best to help them, to serve them in their needs. And in that sense, I always felt kind of limited once I became trained and educated in a particular system. I always felt, well, there's something that I kind of am not familiar with that would help me in any number of situations, but I've kind of come to the full extent of where I can go with this system so that I'd go to another system and learn that. And I found just by experience in my practice that it has really helped me a lot, because when dealing with the, one might say, the limitless life and aspect and reality of a person, of an individual mm-hmm. person as a client, what the one system wouldn't really help me to understand, another system would. So mm-hmm. so it's really possible then to combine these things to get a more comprehensive view and therefore, I think, a better opportunity to really serve and help this person.
Mm-hmm. Now, what happens as far as the diagnosis when you've got three or four different philosophies and different approaches to conditions such as arthritis? Do you use one diagnosis, or do you combine all of the different backgrounds you have, or what do you do as far as the diagnosis?
Right. Well, we combine basically all of these factors. I've, of course, been trained in the classical way of doing these things, the, you know, body diagnosis, tongue diagnosis, pulse diagnosis in these different forms, as well as allopathic medicine, as mm-hmm. how to, you know, in the regular Western system of understanding things also. But I combine them basically in the type of procedures that I do. We use what I'm using currently and have been using for a number of years is a combination, or it really illustrates the point. It's a combination of the classical medical sciences and the modern Western form of quantum physics. It's a sort of a wedding between those two.
Mm-hmm.
And so these procedures that we use are very, very comprehensive, and they combine features of all of these classical medical diagnostic techniques as well as Western medical techniques,
mm-hmm.
and it combines them into one form so that it's easy to administrate and, again, yields a tremendous amount of comprehensive information in terms of evaluation and diagnosis of a client's condition.
Now, I was going to ask you how your treatment differed, but I think you've started to answer that. But how does your treatment then differ from, say, a naturopathic physician or nutritionist or one of the other disciplines that are part of classical medicine?
Well, I think probably the major difference in these medical sciences is that Western allopathic medicine, there are two features of that which are different than other medical sciences. One of the features is that they do not deal with the factor of what other medical sciences call, collectively we call them energies.
Mm-hmm.
In Chinese medicine, they're called qis. In Ayurvedic medicine, they're called pranas, and et cetera. And most people in alternative medicine are familiar with those terms and familiar with the idea that the body really functions by way of these natural or vital energies, which are part of its biological system.
Mm-hmm.
That is not recognized in any way by conventional medicine. So that factor is not involved. The other characteristic of Western medicine is that it does not deal with what we call causal aspects, but it only deals with symptomatic aspects.
Mm-hmm.
For example, with our arthritis, the entire diagnostic procedure and the entire treatment parameter that is used in Western or allopathic medicine has to do with the symptoms in the arthritic joints, for example. It does not deal with the causes. The treatments are all what we call palliative, meaning that they're working on symptoms. They bring down inflammations. They sometimes antibiotics are used, or things like cortisone for reducing inflammation in joints and things like that. It's a control of the symptom areas.
Mm-hmm.
Now, in classical medicine, and European naturopathic medicine, for example, one is, of course, concerned with, and you do evaluate and do treat to a certain extent the levels in the symptoms. But more importantly, the evaluation diagnostic techniques are designed to find out what the causes of these symptoms are.
Mm-hmm.
And the causes and the symptoms are never the same, of course,
obviously.
And so finding the causes, which are very individual, they're never collective.
Mm-hmm.
Causes are always individual. So you have to have some way of evaluating, diagnosing the individual person to find out, in their case, what is causing this dysfunction or inflammation or pathology at the joints that conventional medicine calls arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
And by learning those, understanding those, identifying those, then we can treat those directly, which is the root cause of the disease, and therefore we can eliminate, we can palliate the symptom, and at the same time, we can eliminate the basis or the foundation for why the person has the disease in the first place.
Mm-hmm.
And that is what one could call being truly curative.
Mm-hmm.
And that's the goal of all classical and natural medicine, really, is to do that.
Mm-hmm. Then, is there anything else you would like to say about individuals with arthritis before we talk about your book and any services that you have to offer?
Yes. Let me illustrate what I was saying about the arthritis. For example, there are always, in any pathology, in any symptom, and here we're talking about arthritis, so we can stay with that, there are always many levels of factors, causal factors, symptomatic factors that make up the symptom. Let's say deranged and inflamed joints on a kind of a chronic level. We could call that arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
Let me just name a couple of those for you. Just run kind of through them so that you get an idea of the scope of these evaluations and also the treatment areas and what's involved. And this is just quite superficial here because we're not talking about a specific individual, but just kind of the general aspects of these things. Now, joints are very, very susceptible to toxins. So on a more surface level, one of the things we have to identify first in terms of the symptoms is are any forms of toxic levels that are going on, because the joints are very, very susceptible and vulnerable to toxins, more so than, for example, muscle tissues and other things like that. Also, toxins can come in many, many varieties. They can be toxins coming from the outside, like environmental toxins. They can be toxins that have kind of been implanted in the body, like mercury fillings or the toxins from vaccines or other medicines or things like that, additives from food, etc. They can be toxins from chronic low digestive processes when we're not digesting our food well for whatever reason on a kind of a low-grade chronic thing. That produces toxins, which the joints, for example. So there, we have to look at the toxins. The other thing are the structural systems. The joints work because there are anatomical aspects of muscles, tendons, fascia coming from these, all these interrelated structural systems of our entire body on a muscular level. If there's anything compromising those, that structural level, that's going to put a lot of tension and build in a lot of tension in the joint functions. If that continues and that's not relieved, then these joints are going to become traumatized on low level of tension trauma, and eventually become inflamed and can become distorted from that as well.
Mm-hmm.
Again, that's a pretty typical symptom of of arthritis, and therefore the structural systems have to be evaluated in any given case.
Mm-hmm.
Another aspect is we're getting deeper now in things. The way that the brain works in terms of a person's psychology, we might call it the mind-body connection.
Mm-hmm.
In arthritis, you will always see some form of impingement or impairment of the functions of the cerebellum in the brain, which is the small brain. That really controls a lot of the joint and joint receptor functions on an energetic level. Not on a physiologic, but an energetic level. Now, on the psychological, in the psychological sphere, the cerebellum has to do with self-esteem conflicts. So, a person who has chronic conscious or unconscious vulnerabilities with their self-esteem and self-respect and things like this, their self-manifestations, is very vulnerable. Are their joints and their functional aspects, structural aspects, like arthritis, could develop in arthritis, is very vulnerable. Now, moving deeper from there, we see that the liver and gallbladder system actually control the muscles, joints, fascia, tendons, all these articular aspects of joints. And on the psychological level, they have to do with the deeper way that our entire psyche or our entire mind sort of is planning out our life, you know, creating strategies for the way that we are supposed to respond and live and how we actually, how we manifest ourselves in life and the will to do that, how we're actually able to manifest that in our lives, how we present ourselves, what we do, what our behavior is, what our action is. That's all controlled by the same system that controls the joints and the structural aspects. Now, on the very deepest level, when we add all these things together, the very fact of movement is something that is very, very much involved in human nature, in the sense that movement is our way of interacting and interfacing with life in our environment.
Mm-hmm.
Being able to move in time and space is a way of self-expression, is the way that we discover life by through movement. How we express ourselves through movement. We can see, for example, in our mind's eye, we can see a person who is really kind of broken down by trauma or depression, or a person who is kind of so-called stiff with fear or weak, or all these things. I'm just talking, you know, very superficial examples.
Mm-hmm.
But we can see how these psychological things immediately affect our movement, how our body expresses itself in time and space as it moves.
Mm-hmm.
So the joints on the deepest level have a very profound aspect of our psychology, even of our spirituality, how we perceive life, how if we feel really free and open and spontaneous, our movements will show that. If, on the other hand, life is a very threatening and kind of a dark place for us, our movements will also reflect that. All of these things are going on in the joints, and are part of all of these levels, these simultaneous, deep and superficial levels of things going on in patterns that we could call arthritis.
Mm-hmm.
So in understanding these things, we have to be able to evaluate all these levels in every given client.
Mm-hmm.
And we have to be able to then respond with treatments which are appropriate for these different levels in order to really help them resolve this arthritic problem.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's just kind of an example, kind of superficial example of how we're thinking in those terms.
Mm-hmm. I wasn't familiar with this, so I'm wondering, is this more common in Europe than it is in the United States?
I would say yes. Now, what I've just told you there about these different things, though, that's kind of that's putting together a lot of these systems, Chinese and Ayurvedic and Tibetan.
Mm-hmm. Right.
You know, but yes, I would say that there is a very strong, very, very strong, unbroken tradition, at least of naturopathy in Europe that we don't have in the United States.
Right.
Homeopathy was discovered over there, so to speak, the European form anyway.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of these forms of practice of medicine are much more in the mainstream in Europe, where they're kind of politicized over here and kind of United States. I've practiced most countries of Europe and also practice in Southeast Asia and around. And the United States is probably the most difficult country to practice in that I've ever been in, because the politicization of medicine over here is different than it is in other countries.
And right.
They're quite restrictive.
Mm-hmm. I had a health center for the homeless and low income.
Oh.
And I had a physician visit me from Bielefeld, Germany. And she wanted to see how what she did compared to what my nurse practitioner did in the center, and she concluded that they functioned pretty much the same, except she used a lot more herbs and things like that we weren't using here.
Yes. Now, German doctors, and we're talking about MDs now, they have to have herbal medicine as part of their curriculum, which, of course, over here is, I don't even know how many hours in an entire MD training here in the United States is even has anything to do with diet, for example, much less herbs and things like that. I don't think there's much. But, yes, the European medical systems are typically much more open and much more proficient in natural forms of medicine than we are.
Right. And I found that when I took students to the University of Western England for a comparative health care program, I found the same thing, that they did much more with herbs.
Yes. Yes, indeed.
Well, this is very interesting, David, and I'm wondering now if you would like to tell us about your book and services you offer and how listeners can reach you.
In terms of the services that we have, we only work by referral, so I don't advertise in any way, but we do. I do a lot of teaching and writing in this field, so my website, contact me through my webmaster and my publicist, Lynn Wheezy, for services of that nature. And I'm working on the second book, sort of a follow-up of that, of the one that is published out there. And that book, that first book there, was kind of a, I suppose like all books are, sort of a work of the heart, one might say.
Right.
And it started when I lived in Nepal and was working there in Tibetan medicine and Ayurvedic medicine and doing some, how do you call, praktik, what is that word in English, internship, I guess that's the right word, in Tibetan and Ayurvedic medicine after my training, which had been finished in those fields. And I was constructing a project for UNESCO there, because what I ran into, which I didn't expect, I hadn't lived in a country like Nepal before, and what I found there was that they were so culturally damaged, one might say, that Nepal started back in the 1700s with the British occupation, and then almost every country you can imagine had been in there since, you know, really in taking over things and completely destroying the infrastructure of their own culture, including their own medicine. I mean, Ayurvedic medicine like Buddhism, had some of its great origin in Nepal and northern India, also. But these things were so destroyed and the country was so impoverished that there was really no medical presence. I expected in my naivete that when I got over there, I was thinking, oh, this is so wonderful. I'm going to the birthplace of Ayurveda and I'm just going to, you know, it's going to be, what an experience. You know, I got over there and go off into these villages in on the foothills of the Himalayas, and there wasn't a single Ayurvedic practitioner. There was nobody that knew anything about anything at all. They had no idea what any herbs were for or anything. There's that whole infrastructure of their culture had been destroyed, primarily by the British quite a long time ago. And there were a lot of difficulties in people being able to come down from these villages in these mountains into Kathmandu, which is the only place you could get any medical help whatsoever. And so I decided to devise a program, it was UNESCO, of training people, going into a village, getting four or five volunteers from that village to go into a comprehensive training program where we would train them basically as kind of barefoot doctors like the Chinese did during the revolution, and so that they could go back to their villages and be the medical presence there as best possible. And the constraints upon this had to be that there could be no money involved at all, because we didn't want to make this program or these people any more dependent on welfare or, you know, the charity from other countries or things, you know, money or, you know, things like this. So they had to be able to do everything without any money. They had to be able to make medical substances. They had to be able to do all their work right with what they had at hand where it didn't cost them anything.
Mm-hmm.
And so there we devised a way of working with local herbs and mostly foods, but things that they had at home at hand otherwise. I mean, if they didn't have food, they would starve, and that's not a medical problem. That's a social problem.
Mm-hmm.
So no medical treatment is going to help you for starvation.
Right.
So as long as you have the foods and the spices and things that people had for their daily food, we know how, through the classical medical sciences, how to turn those things into medicines, at which you could do with just a little bit of water, milk, or fire, and
uh-huh.
how to do that. And so we would train these people. That was the idea, so they could go back and do this. After I came back to the West here, I saw in a limited form that same problem, that there were a lot of people, even though like a country like Denmark, for example, there's universal health care.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone
right.
can go to a doctor. It costs them nothing.
Mm-hmm.
And medicines don't cost them anything. So they have the health care. But the only place they got health care was in conventional medicine, which meant that every time their child got a sore throat or fever, they'd have to go to the doctor and get penicillin, which really is not necessarily healthy.
Right.
Seen from a naturopathic or a holistic point of view. So I thought of revising what we'd done in Nepal, UNESCO, into a book that could be used in the West
mm-hmm.
for just average families, training them through the book, through the information in the book. If your child or a member of your family develops a simple fever or a sore throat or can't sleep well or has some digestive disturbances or any of these types of typical ailments that we all experience at least once or twice a year for whatever reason,
mm-hmm.
you know, colds, flus, you know, things like that. What can you do at home without having to know anything about homeopathy or how to use herbs or anything like that? What can you do with things that you have right at your fingertips?
Mm-hmm.
You'll usually have oils of some kind. You'll usually have spices of some kind. You'll usually have certain types of foodstuffs or vegetables, certain things, not just to eat healthily, but how you can turn these into very, very effective medicines.
Mm-hmm.
And it doesn't cost you anything either, plus the fact they are effective and they are non-invasive. They are not going to cause any health problems,
mm-hmm.
which perhaps antibiotics would be doing. And so that was the whole idea of the book, keeping the same criteria. People could read the book, they could understand what was in it. They did not have to become experts in herbal medicine or homeopathy or anything to do these things at home.
Mm-hmm.
And it was readily available to them. It was right there. And at the same time, teaching them something, or rather that might, I don't mean to have that sound condescending, but giving
mm-hmm.
information, providing information from all of these cultures, from all of this classical medical cultures. What I wanted to do was to take the most sophisticated of all the information, things that take years otherwise to learn in
mm-hmm.
different cultures and languages, and boil that down and state it in such a way, or not boil it down, that might be the wrong English expression there, but to communicate it in such a way that it didn't lose its context
mm-hmm.
and importance, but that anyone could understand it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we just eliminate all the foreign words and, you know, the Sanskrit
mm-hmm.
words and Chinese words and all those kind of things.
Right.
And just explain this in what we might say is plain, understandable English.
Mm-hmm.
And really let people become educated on how the body functions in these different ways, what they should be looking for, how to do these things in very simple ways, but still having a profound effect on
mm-hmm.
it. So that was the idea behind the book, actually, and
mm-hmm.
I suppose an author is never really very aware of if you've been successful or not, so I'm not sure, but that was the intention at any rate.
Yeah. And you said then you have a second one?
Yes, the second one that I'm working on now, my publicist, Lynn Wiese, who has been a great support all these years with these things, actually she was a student of mine that came to Nepal
mm-hmm.
during some of our teachings, and we became acquainted that way, and started working together on these different things. And she said, well, you've been learning all these different things in many different cultures and different things. Why don't you write a book that would be like a journal, some type of a sort of almost an autobiography where you could explain how one learns these things or how what your experiences were in learning these things. And I thought at first, good heaven, that's a little too intimate. I don't know if I would really want to get into those things. But at the same time, then I thought, well, wait a second. I have really been very, very grateful and been so privileged in being able to have met many wonderful people in the world, also, both as patients and as masters and as teachers and fellow colleagues, and been very, very privileged to be able to learn a lot of things that other people have mastered and other people have gained tremendous insights into. And I thought this would be a really good way to kind of show that, to kind of honor them and kind of honor these traditions and bring people a more firsthand view of these things than just a book on medical theory would do for example. So I kind of capitulated there, and I've been quite happy sitting writing on these chapters here. So
when do you anticipate this will be done?
Well, I would say most of the writing is pretty much done, but we're going to have to find a publisher here, and I don't anticipate a major struggle there. And I would certainly hope that within a year something would emerge from this.
Now, did you give us your website?
Oh, I don't believe so. The website is www.davidnrussell.com, and it's all one long word, no spaces. The N is for Norman, davidnrussell.com. And there's a lot of information on that website, actually, mostly having to do with different levels of information about holistic medicine. There are menus for people who are just interested, and then there are menus for professionals.
Well, I appreciate this very much, David. It's been very interesting.
Well, it's been wonderful being with you, Carl, today, and also thinking of all of your listeners out there and all the good work and service that you're doing for them on your programs. And certainly wishing them all the very best and blessings to yourself and everyone involved in your projects here.
Thank you. I thank you for joining me on the Holistic Health Show today. I hope some of the information was useful to you. I also want to invite you to my website, where you can find older Holistic Health shows and the current one to be posted tomorrow. You will also find information about my latest book, Healthy Holistic Aging, that was the framework for this show and that covers all the physical, mental, and spiritual ways for you to stay healthy and live into your older years free of chronic illnesses and prescribed medications, as I have at age 77. I again want to thank those who have come to my website, over 200,000 in the last 9 months, and for the many from other countries who come to my site. This week, I have 28% of my visitors from Russia. Thank you very much. On the next show, we will start a series on chronic back pain. I hope this will be of interest to you and that you will join me again. Until then, I wish you a great week.